EMSradio.com.
EMS information for the next generation.
The EMS Leadership Podcast is a production of EMSradio.com. You can interact with us via email, emsleadership@gmail.com, or call us 303-720-6001.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the EMS Leadership Podcast. And now here's your host, Chris Ceballero.
Well, this is it, ladies and gentlemen. We're back with the EMS Leadership. And, you know, just a great time I think we're going to have. It's always fun talking with the guests before we start recording. And, you know, I've been saving a lot of those. So hopefully by the time we get to the end of the year, I'll have a nice little outtake show. And I think it'll be funny. There's a lot of things that we talk about that we can't air. It is a family show. And there's other things that we talk about that are just downright funny. I wonder why we're not funny when we're recording, though, guys. So we're going to have to figure that out. So, but I want to thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Chris Ceballero. And, you know, there's been a lot of things going on in the news lately that got me thinking about how do we manage organizations in crisis. I mean, we have the DC fire where the gentleman passed away across the street and they couldn't get a fire engine to go across the street and give some aid. Recently, the EMT is accused of sexual assault because he cut the clothes off a teenage girl. And, you know, that was a big issue. There's an EMS chief that has some sexual harassment claims against him. So when we think about these national things that are going on, how do we prepare our organizations? If we're inside these media events, you know, we think about crisis management. How do we go about dealing with it? How do we keep ourselves out of getting in these situations? But once we're in them, how do we manage our organizations? How do we manage talking to the press? Well, we got our cast of characters here today, and we're going to see if we can get some of those answers for you. First off, we're going out to California and talk with Patrick Pianezza. Patrick, how are you doing out there?
Fabulous, Chris. I'm excited to be here, and this is a much needed conversation. So I think I'm excited to participate.
You know, it's one of the things we've not addressed when we looked back on our archives. We've really not talked about crisis management, but it's something that we could all fall into. So I'm just as excited as you are. We're going to go ahead and go to the East Coast and the Commonwealth of Virginia, and our international correspondent, Rob Lawrence. Rob, how are you?
Good evening, and a happy World Cup to everybody that's watching the round ball being played.
That's right, and tomorrow, it will be Saturday the 14th, and Italy will beat England.
Italy will crush England.
That's right.
It is the annual Lawrence Pianezza soccer match. Absolutely.
That's right. That's what we're going to do. And then finally, we go up the coast a little bit down. We go down the coast a little bit to South Carolina and our resident president, Don Lundy. Sir, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. And thanks for mentioning that sport thing, the round ball. And I completely forgot that. Of course, tomorrow is the 14th, which is Flag Day. A very important time in this country to reminisce about how the flag got there and the history of it, how they're doing a little something here. Again, thanks for having me on the show. It's an honor to be here.
Always great. So, guys, you know, you kind of heard the intro. When we think about all these things that we read in the news, I mean, God forbid, knock on wood, our organization finds themselves in these national headlines, which can very well happen at any given time. How are we going to manage that? But first off, I want to go ahead and hit you with, and I'll kind of throw it open to the group, is how do we keep ourselves out of these situations? How do we keep our organizations on the straight and narrow that we don't have to worry about getting into these crises, into these national news? Is there a best way? Is there a recipe to keep ourselves on that straight and narrow?
There is absolutely something that everybody should do when they become a manager, and it's something that sits in the back of everybody's head, but they just don't get time to do it. Most managers believe that the press is evil, they're terrible, they're just there to make headlines, they're just there to sell newspapers. In fact, they're there like we're there to do their job, and the preemptive to everything is to have a relationship with the local press organizations that are there. Now, certainly on a national scale, that's hard to do, but I would throw out there that a national headline and a local headline, the only difference is how much ink is used, but it can be just as damaging to the organization. And if you don't use your local press, they will end up using you. So you use them by making a good contact with them, letting them know that you're available for interviews for any issues that might come up, good or bad, that if there's a big news item going out, certainly you'll be busy, but you'll try to give them a heads up on it. If they have any questions about a news item, here's the number to call. It's me. It's my cell phone. The idea that you don't want the press to have your cell phone, you're just asking for trouble. And you create some stories for them, which we do all the time. Good PR. Sometimes there's bad news that comes out. It's not crisis management, but it's stories of tragedies that we can say. You can interview somebody about that process and create that that positive event so that when they have a news item, they're going to go to you. It works. It's worked for me for many, many years. It'll work for everybody. Even if you don't like the press, there's a lot of people we deal with on a daily basis that we don't like, but we still professionally manage to deal with them, and you can do that too.
I'm going to add on to that, Chris, to say that we're never out of the media. We're never out of the news, and sometimes people make an issue. Well, what's RIA doing again? Well, it's doing exactly what Don said. It takes, somebody once said, it takes 10 good news stories to help you counter the one bad one. So those relationships, getting to know your print TV reporters, absolutely key activity for us. And we make a big deal out of doing it, out of including it, generating stories that are of public interest, publicizing things that we're doing in the community. So we have a hearts and minds win for both the community within which we're doing good stuff, and also a hearts and minds win for those media journalists that are, as Don said, doing a job. I think it's in EMS World this month that Benjamin Gilmore, the famous paramedico out of Australia, wrote an article called Life Under the Camera. And of course, everything that we do now out on the street, somebody's got a device in which to record us. And it doesn't take much to get that uploaded to the whatever your news station is to become an item. So you have to be prepared for that, but also you have to be friendly and available and accessible and always have a story and always have a point of contact and someone that can work with them, and actually it pays dividends. Absolutely.
So I think that's really great advice, and I echo both those pieces of advice for everybody out there. Patrick, I want to change your question a little bit. Now that we know what we're doing to keep the organization in a good light, how do we ensure that our workforce doesn't put us in situations that will explode the organization into a media event?
I mean, ultimately, there's a few things that are really important. And to echo what they're saying about the PIO stuff is very, very critically important. I want to make sure that doesn't get overstated enough. But the number one thing that you could do to keep your organization from doing things like this is focusing on employee engagement. And that's really where I would spend the majority of your time if you're looking at trying to keep your organization on track. And it's got many, many different facets in it. But having an engaged, satisfied workforce decreases the chance of your providers doing any kind of risky behaviors. And that's really going to be your number one way to keep your stuff on the straight and narrow. Now, that is much easier said than done. I mean, it's going to require talking to your staff, rounding, if you like to use that nomenclature, but being engaged in your day-to-day operations and physically being there, having a presence. That way everybody knows that when they step out of line, there are repercussions for that. Because the minute you start letting lackadaisical behaviors start to occur, it will start to compound and it will start to become exponentially worse until somebody gets in trouble. And if you have a hands-off management approach, if you're scared to have these crucial conversations, you are going to ultimately end up with a camera shoved in your face going, why did they do this and what kind of organization are you running? And that's really what we're trying to avoid here. So from my standpoint is in order to have the best possible chance to not have this happen, you have to have engaged managers and educated managers and well-developed leadership in order to have conversations before they become critical or before somebody does something ultimately that is going to put your organization in a tremendously bad light.
I think to add to that, the more that you do positive media, the more people from your organization that get on camera, the more opportunities your junior leadership initially under your supervision have a chance to be that talking head person. And actually it then breeds the fact that everybody realizes it doesn't take much to get on TV for good or for bad. Add to that, then, we have what we always talk about is the front page test. You know, is this action going to get me on the front page of, in our case, the Richmond Times-Dispatch tomorrow? And actually, that's always in the foremost in people's minds, particularly the managers, particularly the crew chiefs, if you want to call them that. And of course, it does help people remain conscious of the fact that you are, you know, just a second away from being on the being the headline news.
Well, also, when we talked about pre-planning, and that's really what this is, pre-planning with the press and putting some putting a contact out there and working with them and being with them, there's also pre-planning with the crews to say, okay, we know, like you said, Rob, we're never out of PIO. We're never out of camera range. The focus should always be on the sick guy. Now, you've heard me say that before, but ultimately that leads right into this. The minute, and if you look at some of the situations that have happened, the sick guy is the least person thought of when you're going through that process. It is the issue of ethics, and sometimes it's a good idea to have a class taught in ethics, not to say that one ethic is better than the other, but to say, what is the ethic of your organization, and what should it be? Generally, if you do that pre-planning and that pre-training, everybody's kind of on the same sheet. And if you look at the things that have come out in the press recently, obviously there are many departments not on the same sheet at all. There, some of them aren't singing the same song, and some of them aren't singing at all.
And I would add to that what Don is saying. Something as simple as telling your crews or ensuring that your crews know that if a reporter comes up to them and asks them poignant questions, their response should be, or I'm sorry, it depends on your organization, but I would say point them to the public information officer. Do not let your crews speak off script to the media, because like Don just said, you're going to start getting a multitude of different messages, and you're going to have to defend your organization's stance based on what one or two people are saying, because now they're wearing your uniform, they're on camera, and they are saying something that may be completely contradictory to your organization. So creating a standard that says any kind of press requests must go through the PIO prior to, you know, being quoted. And it's not the same thing as saying no comment, because the minute you say that, you look guilty as sin.
Right. But no comment is a comment.
Right. And the other thing, what Don said that I thought was very powerful, is the communication plans. Take notes from what the airline industry does. They have all of these backup systems to assure that planes don't crash. But if you go to any major airline's corporate headquarters, they've got 2 to 6 huge binders that lay out step by step what they do the minute a plane goes down. And something like that can be put in place into your chief's office, so that way when something happens, you can refer to that binder and start saying, okay, so these are all of my contacts, and it's got to be a living document, and here's what we do, and here's who we contact, et cetera.
Yeah, and I like that you brought that up, and one of the things that we use for our supervisor staff is, by policy, I'm not allowed to comment, but let me go ahead and get you to the guy that can answer the question, or the person that can answer the question, because as I said, and as you brought up, no comment is a comment, and it does make you seem guilty. But all right, so guys, let's go ahead and shift gears a little bit, because we're getting into it, and we're kind of preparing in our minds, are we really ready to go? So that really bad thing happens, and I'm talking about bad, and I've had an opportunity in my career to be in an organization that had a horrible event happen. It affected the organization negatively. It affected the community negatively. It came to the point that shopkeepers were saying, I don't want you coming here and spending your money in my place. And they were turning our crews away for food. They were turning our crews away for fuel. And it was a very, very horrible time for us. So now that's happened. How do we first handle internally our organizations?
You know, I was glad you asked that. I wasn't sure where that question was going to go, but that's exactly where I was going to go with it. I too, and my bet is Patrick and Rob as well, we have all been in that position where the horrible thing has happened. We've gotten that call at 2:30 in the morning, or it could be at 12 noon, to say, you need to go somewhere where we can talk on the phone private. I need to tell you something. It's bad. And we get this news that's devastating to the organizations. If you look at some of the organizations that haphazardly attempt to fix it, and I don't mean to be flippant about this, but they go and get a clown, and the clown starts juggling. And they say, look over there, the clown's juggling. And it might not be a flippant, happy thing. It might be, we're going to do some great stuff with the press. It might be that. Meanwhile, the crews, the ones that are devastated at a whole different level, are kind of forgotten. And I was in an organization where a devastating thing occurred. And unfortunately, this was a wonderful organization, but they forgot They just forgot the cruise, and it has affected them. It's been 30 years since this happened, and it affects them to this day. Every manager that was there has already moved on or retired. Everybody's changed, and it still affects them. In fact, they're going to be absorbed by another organization real soon, and I kind of put that at the head of it because the employees were forgot. The thing we need to do in a crisis management is step right in front of the train, step right up to the microphone, step right up to the computer. If it is a personal note, we need to let the crews know, here is what's going on. This is a bad thing. I'm devastated by it. We had no idea. We're going to be talking. You're going to see your name in the press the next couple of days or weeks. People are going to do exactly what you said, Chris. They're not going to let you in the store. They're going to make cursory remarks. Be the professional that you are. Smile at them and say, what else can I help you with? Don't bring mention of it. Don't try to defend it. Be the professionals that you are and take care of the sick patient. And that's real hard to do when your community is suddenly turned against you or when the hospitals have turned against you. But ultimately, if you are a good organization followed by one bad item, that will your reputation will hold out and your professionalism will hold out. It's just a very hard, rough road, but you need to look everybody in the eye and tell them the road's going to be rough. The seas are going to churn. Water's going to come over the deck. Hold on to the rail. We will get through this and be the leader you're supposed to be and tell them, I am hurt like you are. I am devastated by this like you are. We need to keep going. There's sick patients out there that need us. The worst you can do is say nothing, close the door, say, I'm really hurt and I'm so mad at everybody, and take your anger out on the crews or anybody that happens to be within 20 feet.
Just to carry on from Don's point, and really I'm going to steal one of Patrick's lines, in fact, that the playbook, or whatever you want to call it, we call it lines to take, actually. It's a series of pre-prepared almost statements that you can insert your name or the situation here. Are prepared, and as Patrick said, it's we have a living document, because if something happens of a major or catastrophic nature, of course, you're going to be, press are going to be on top of you fairly quickly. And so, you know, to have a document such as that, that has, you know, and it's a chance to privately come up with those scenarios that you don't really want to talk about, but you have to have a plan for them. And so, you know, we have that, and we had to use it. We had much publicized, and in fact, we wrote about it in EMS World back in April. We had a vehicle accident that was fairly devastating, luckily to the vehicle, and thank the Lord, the crew was fine, but that attracted a lot of attention. That required us to act very quickly, both externally to the media, internally to the workforce, who clearly were very worried, and of course, personally to those that were directly involved. And so we had to work very, very quickly. And so that's a top tip. And whether it's an airline or whether it's, you know, even a volunteer rescue squad, it's something that you should think about. Yes, Don's right as well. I've had that moment. Back in the UK, I was a chief operating officer of a large ambulance service, and we had a patient that sadly died. And of course, the real issue for us was that the family spoke to us via the headline of the local newspaper. And that's a tough one to deal with, because you have no right of reply. You also have the issue of when is too soon, or when do you speak to the family that are concerned? And of course, there is, you know, you run the risk of one side of it is you are too soon in our grief. Or the other side of it is, why did you take so long? And of course, you're never going to win that. But you have to be prepared for that sort of scenario. And I was right in the middle of that as the chief operating officer at the time, and having to deal with the press, having to be very considerate towards a family who were clearly very deep in their grief, let's say, but the newspaper got to them first and were doing a public service by letting everybody know how they were feeling. And of course, we had to react to that. And we eventually, you know, got to speak to the family. We had a very public with the press discussion with them, and things calmed down, but it's really, really rough and tough. And then of course you get in the UK, you have a thing called the coroner's court, where you have to stand under oath and talk about, as the head of your organization, what happened to the patient. The coroner eventually rules on the cause of death, accidental, deliberate, etc. But again, you do that in the full glare of the public eye, and it's something that, as a very senior leader, you have to be prepared to deal with. And the way that you are prepared to deal with that is practice if you can take PIO classes, and there are some good ones. Emmitsburg run them, you know, local journalists, freelancers, etc. run them, to get some top-level training. And when I say top-level training, it's going through all of those scenarios that you may face under exercise conditions, let's say. And by doing that, I did mine with the BBC, in fact, back in the UK, and it prepared me wonderfully for what was to come. But as a top-level manager, if you can take in some of that sort of training.
I'm going to take this from a different point of view, because I don't want to have to restate anything that Rob or Don said, because I think it's really quite brilliant. But I want to take the aspect of when the bad thing happens, this is the absolute time that you have to be intimately familiar with your processes and procedures. And what I mean by that is you have to investigate first. And before, just like anything else in America, you're innocent until proven guilty, although that's not always the case in the media eye. But you must absolutely follow the letter and the law of your processes, where that means that person goes on administrative leave. Is it with or without pay? Is there discretion there? But you have to follow precedent, because there's been some stuff recently in the media where some guys are getting investigated for some pretty questionable behaviors. And the question is, when they put that camera in your face, what are you going to tell them? This person is on administrative leave pending, you know, pending pay, with pay, without pay. We'll get back to you once we know what's going on, etc. But you have to investigate the incident, and you have to investigate the incident as quickly to the time of the occurrence as you possibly can. That way you're not losing valuable details that get lost in the ether of time. So absolutely follow, because you're already under the microscope. If you make any kind of delineation because you really like this person or because you personally think they're guilty, it doesn't matter. You have to follow your processes and procedures. And then ultimately follow through. If it requires this person to be terminated, that's fine. If you find out that the media is taking a really bad spin on this and they did everything by the letter of the law, you have to go there and you have to say that too in front of everybody. But like Don said very early on, I don't want it glazed over. Even if this person was dead wrong and did something absolutely terrible, you have to step in and also take care of them too, because they're in some sort of crisis mode. So you have to make sure that that person's direct supervisor is taken care of, that the actual provider, even if they were acting willfully incorrectly, you still have to kind of help counsel them and help them get the help that they need, as well as anybody else in who was working that shift, et cetera. You just have to take a broad look at your organization.
A real short story about a devastating thing that happened here to give a classic example, I think, of what Patrick is talking about. Probably most everybody listening to the show knows that some time ago, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, I'm sorry, we lost 9 firefighters in a devastating fire. There were lots of things found in the investigation, but of course, in this Real Housewives of Atlanta, Georgia world, we believe that if somebody kind of maybe looks like they're bad, they should be fired. Firing people is that just fixes everything. We should fire them, fire them, fire them. And of course, there was a huge call to fire the fire chief at that time. The mayor here, Joe Riley, I have a tremendous amount of respect for. He and I are of different political parties, but in fact, I probably agree more with his view than a lot of. I think he's more of a statesman. The second, or it's 48 hours, the embers are not even cooled in the building, and the press shoved a mic up at him, several of them, hundreds of them, and said, "So are you going to fire the chief?" And he looked into the camera and he said, "Let me make it real clear. He was my fire chief 3 days ago. He's my fire chief today, and he'll be my fire chief tomorrow. We are going to investigate this, not only us, but several federal entities, and we will find the truth of what really happened. Until then, we don't know." And I, to this day, all of us would hope we'd have a boss like that, a supervisor like that. And I know there might be men and women listening to the show that say, "Well, you know, I really thought he should have been fired." I got that. But I think Patrick's right. You need to step up. You need to investigate right now. And anything you do off the cuff to please somebody in that crowd, you're going to tee off somebody else. You won't accomplish what you think you wanted to accomplish.
There is almost a sort of converse to that. And people also do stuff off duty and out of uniform. And it happens. We know that. But what the media pick up on is the fact that they're still the, you know, bediddly boing paramedic of bediddly boing rescue squad, no matter whether they did it on duty or off duty. And that immediately sends people running back to your door. And then you have a reputation management issue as well. So let's talk about that side of it for a second, Chris, because you then have to deal with that. And it comes back to Patrick's thing of, you know, well, perhaps this issue that's occurred requires you to take some sort of action because, you know, that there is a court case pending or some sort of charge or allegation. Then you have to get into administrative paid or unpaid leave. But the fact is you're tagged with the actions of someone else that, yes, works for you but isn't on duty. And it comes back to the great question of, well, you're never off duty then, are you? And you should consider your actions all the time. But it's one of those ones that's tough because you want to go, well, actually, he was off duty and it's nothing to do with us. But the headline, and I have a great friend who is a media editor in England, and I'll talk about how I got into writing with him and all the things I'm doing now because of an issue that happened. But they look for what they call impactful headlines. And it may not be absolutely correct, but it's the thing that gets you to pick up the paper and read it in the first place. So therefore, it's Bediddly Boing paramedic got caught in doing X, Y, and Z. Or Z if you're listening in England. And so that's something you have to be prepared to deal with as well.
And let me, Rob, that's excellent. And let me tell you, my brother was a managing editor of a very large newspaper before he retired, and I've learned so much from him. One of the very first devastating things that happened in our system here, it was off-duty, an employee for many years, it resulted in an arrest. I immediately took my brother's knowledge, and I went to my boss and I said, "Hi, here's the facts I need to send out to every press place about this arrest today." And they stared at me like I was crazy. What would you want to fax this out? And I said, "Well, he's going to be in a bond hearing in 4 hours. If you don't think they're going to figure it out then, we need to be in front of this train, send it out. They have nowhere to go. Hi, Joey was arrested. He was not on duty at the time. And like you said, the question of suspended with pay, without pay, I always side for suspending with pay. It's better for everybody concerned, and you give everybody the best chance until the investigation's over with. Amen." They call and say, "What about this? What about, did you see the press release, sir?" And the press release is our statement, and they have nowhere to go. Well, for those listening to the show who are shaking their head saying, "I'd never send a press release," well, then you're going to end up with them in your front yard at 10 o'clock at night asking questions you're not going to be prepared to ask.
You know, a couple of times I've been listening to what you guys are saying, and I'm jotting some notes. And as I look back on my notes, one of the things that resonates that you all said similar in your context of your statements was doing that investigation. Now, let me ask you this question because it made me think. Is it best that we have a media event that could be national news, certainly local news, it's in the paper, we're going to spend a couple days now on the local news with this, do we conduct these internal investigations, or is it best to invite someone in to look at our policies and say, a third party to say, go ahead and conduct this investigation? I'd like to get each of y'all's opinion on that.
I'll start because that's a great question. Yes, we still need to do an internal investigation because there are some, in many cases, some employment issues that need to be worked through. And an internal investigation at that point is going to tell you about your procedures very quickly about whether it's a white or a black incident, whether it's an up or down incident. But certainly, if you have not, you need to either send somebody within your entity to an investigative program, to an investigative school, because that's not part of the paramedic program, or better yet, to have somebody in HR sent to an investigative process so that they know how to do it. And last but not least, you know, what we have for a lot of different incidents, since we are a county entity, our county sheriff's department, our county detective bureau, they do the investigation, and they can generally do this in 48 to 72 hours. We still do an internal because our HR requires it, but we work alongside that investigator and make sure it is. I think you're right. Somebody needs to be on the outside looking in, particularly if it's questionable whether you as the manager knew it was going on at the time or not. Whether you did or not isn't the point. The point is the Mad Housewives of Atlanta put it on Facebook, and it's true until proven otherwise. I think it's a good idea to have two sets of eyes, one internal and one not.
Rob, what do you think?
I think inevitably there has to be an investigation. We are very good at appointing somebody that's not in the direct department or the direct report of those with whom have the incident. And whether it's an investigation, whether it's a root cause analysis, whether it's an after action review, actually we have a fairly robust and thorough process that allows us to to get into it. When we have things like, and let's go back to vehicle accidents, one of the things that we've also instigated is actually a peer review as well. And again, I'm not in the criminal realm now, but I'm now into the investigative realm. But to actually have a peer review to let them look and come up with some conclusions as well, if it's something like an equipment loss or something that's of a lower level of acuity, let's say. But it's always got to be very thorough. It's always got to be done by someone that's not in the chain of command of the person or persons that's involved. And it needs to be allowed to come to its fullest conclusion and draw out the recommendations, draw out observations, draw out lessons identified. You know, I'm not a man that say lessons learned until they truly are, but lessons identified. And of course, recommendations and root cause with which we internally understand how we can avoid it, how we can navigate it, and how we can, you know, move on from there.
I would just echo what they're saying. I would say it depends on the scope of the incident. If it's something that you can handle on the day-to-day without disrupting day-to-day operations, I would say it's okay to handle internally. Reach out to your partners out there, especially law enforcement. I mean, this is what they do day in and day out. But if it's something that's going to make big head news, the Charleston 9, my heart went out to them. And like for that kind of incident, then yeah, you're going to have a separate person come in, or a separate entity altogether come in and investigate to make sure that you're on the up and up. But it's one of those things where if you need the external resources, make that call, and make that call early and often, to keep, especially if you're in a government organization, everything has to be done by the letter, because it's got to be able to hold up to public scrutiny.
So now as we move forward, as we said, you know, I've kind of set up the scenario that we have an event, papers, it's been on the news a couple days, something that's not going to go away. It's just going to keep percolating until we finally get some coffee here. So let's talk about specifically about dealing with the media. And this is one of the things that a lot of us learned on the job. A lot of us, you know, we took some classes here or there and listened to some speakers here and there. And I don't know that we're ever really ready to talk to the press when it comes to something negative. But how do we now get into the practicality of dealing with the media on an event like this?
Well, the idea is when this happens, you need to reach out to the media. You don't need to wait for them to figure out the questions you're not going to want to answer and come knocking at their door. You know, the underbelly joke of managers is, you know, it's a bad day when Mike Wallace with 60 Minutes shows up at your front door and says, "Hi, I got a question." You know, that's going to be a bad day. So there are lots of entities out there that need to be touched. Certainly your crews need to be touched. If it's a small sentinel incident where two or three crew members, you know, your first priority is to touch them and make sure they're okay. It was a terrible incident. If it's a criminal incident, somebody's been arrested. Certainly somebody else in a large county or city hotel that we built is taking care of those people at the moment. And the issue is the system itself, to make sure they know they're going to be, you know, their organization's going to be on camera. And it's not just your chief here who's sitting here. It's everybody who's going to be involved. And to make sure they understand professionalism remains. You're not the one that is accused of this, but you're wearing the same uniform. Be professional. Smile. Be kind to everybody no matter what they say. And that's real hard for people to do. And then finally, I think Rob brought it up, to have a set series of statements that you can make. I am certainly a fan of faxing out a press release as quick as you can as to what happened. Generally, and unless it's a huge event like the Charleston 9, generally the press doesn't find out about it very often. To them, it doesn't matter whether it happened 5 days ago. It could be breaking news right this minute because they have a hole in the newspaper or a hole in the TV show. But to have that statement, listen, so-and-so has been arrested or such-and-such occurred. We are talking to the employees. We will have an investigation. So-and-so has been suspended with pay, without pay, whatever, pending the outcome of the investigation. Have a nice day. Amen. And answer the questions that you want to answer that will give them the pertinent information they need to know, but nothing beyond that because of an investigation going on. I think once you do that, it's a story. They can box it kind of nice and it be on their way. Again, another small story about a rural system in which we hit and killed a pedestrian one night, one afternoon, actually. I'd been there 4 days. It was my fourth day as a manager. We go out to the scene, and this wasn't a pedestrian. It was a guy on a bicycle. He was in cardiac arrest. You could tell by the crews, they were devastated. When we transported him to the hospital, I called my boss and said, "Hi, it's only 4 days, but we've hit and killed a pedestrian." And this is a true story. He told me on the phone, he goes, "Another one?" And I found out that 4 years before then, we had hit and killed another pedestrian at another time. And the headlines in the other story were what I call Kennedy assassination headlines: ambulance kills person. Now, I'd been there 4 days, so I had not had a chance to build a good press relationship. The editor called about 24 hours later. I called her back and said, "I just got my new cell phone. Let me give you the number. Here's my office number. Here's my home address. Anytime you have an issue, call me. If I have an issue, I'll try to call you. But let me make something clear. If you attempt to rape my employees like you did the first story, this will be the last conversation we ever have." Now that's kind of strong, but it was in a crisis mode. And in fact, I had a tremendous relationship with that newspaper for the remainder of the time I was there because we understood one another. This was a guy who had been drinking, who wandered in front of one of eight vehicles. There was a bread truck in front of us. It could have been the bread truck, but it was us instead. And it was a tragedy. And the last conversation I had with him was, "But remember, that's all it is. It's just a tragedy." So I think stepping out there in front, not hiding from it, not saying, "Let's wait for the press to come to us," last thing you want to do, and have a set standard procedure to go through, is your best bet.
Actually, Don's comments segue nicely into the notes that I just made, and a presentation I'm currently developing based on, you know, what I do here in Richmond, which is called PIO, a publicist. Talking about the various sort of levels of way that you can address the press, whether it's just the standard press release and then you invite phone calls, whether you have a press conference, and if it's a sentinel event, then you might want to have a press conference where you can, dare I say, and in this phase, I'm talking about how you deal with the press now. You get it all over within one shot. You may have five or six news stations. You may have five or six microphones on the desk. Therefore, they're getting the same message from you at one time, so that therefore, you know, if you do five or six press junkets, you know, you may just miss to make a point, and then of course things could be twisted. And then of course there's the one-to-one that you might want to do with your friendliest station, that again, one that you may have cultivated, one that may well give you the best light. And then of course there is the type of interview you might do, and there's a big difference between being interviewed live and doing a pre-record. If you're doing a pre-record, of course, the key thing is you have 3 points. No matter what question you're asked, you can make your 3 points, or you can turn the question into your 3 points again and again and again. And when it's cut, therefore, you can actually make sure they're your points and not their questions. Live, people aren't great fans of live. I'm a great fan of live because I know I can count in my head I'm going to get 3 minutes, and I can therefore ensure that I can make my points to the live audience in that time. Now that takes a skill, but of course there are types of scenario that you maybe have to be prepared, and where I'm going with this is to be trained to do that. And so if you have an opportunity, and I said it before, to get some training in at the executive level and go through the scenarios and have someone with a camera thrusting it in your face and having to deal with these issues, then you should take it. So, you know, live, pre-recorded, press release, press conference, or a one-to-one are things you just need to be prepared to deal with ahead of the time.
And I think that's absolutely essential. I mean, having had those classes and also having an undergraduate degree in public relations, I would say that fortunately I've had my fair share of the educational piece. And from that, I want to talk to those of you that are listening to this show for when that camera is in your face. First of all, like Rob said, take the classes. They're absolutely instrumental and will make your life much easier for when that camera shows up. Secondly, when that camera is there, whether it's live or pre-recorded, whatever, do not use humor. This is my number one big thing that you must absolutely understand. No matter what happens in EMS, we tend to have gallows humor. It's part of who we are. We've talked about it multiple times on this show about how we're kind of unique in that area. you absolutely cannot use humor at any point during this tragedy, investigation, whatever. It does not translate well. Your community will ultimately look at you as either some form of less than professional organization, or at the worst, you know, you may be looking at a slanderous lawsuit. And if you do have a journalist that is just outright dogging you or trying to do what I like to call gotcha journalism, feel free to stand on your own two feet and say, we don't know yet. We're waiting on the investigation. And if they continue to pepper you with the same question over and over again or variations of the same question, you can continue to say, we're waiting on the ultimately, we're waiting for what the investigation is going to show us. But go get the education. Take the classes. They're well worth your time. I know Rob said he's getting ready to do one at EMS Expo. Go and listen to these classes. Have somebody record you and throw these questions at you, because that is the best way to learn.
You know, one of the things that I want to add to that, Patrick, and I think that was very astute, was that I use what I like to call the double nickel. And when we think about how we're going to present, I like the method of a prepared statement. As Don mentioned with the press release, this is the thing. This is the challenge. This is what we're going to do. This is when we'll get back to you with any information. And then it kind of closes the door. You know, this was a horrible thing. We're going to look into it. We're going to use our processes. We've got somebody coming in from the outside to help us with an investigation. We'll get back to you in 30 days. And then I use a double nickel. The double nickel is what I call, as you prepare, and this is something that you really have to prepare for, because you don't know what they're going to ask you. So the double nickel is, first, what are the top five questions you want them to ask you? And then practice those answers. And then on the flip side of that, what are the five questions you don't want to hear? And then answer those questions as well. So at least it prepares you for the best, and it prepares you for the worst, and at least you know that they're eventually going to get there. Another thing that I'll do is, if I make a statement, and the statement is written and prepared, and then I'm asked questions as a follow-on to anything that's in that statement, I'll say that we have to refer to the statement. I have no other information than that. So those are really good things to think about. I got to tell you guys, as we look at our time for a topic that, you know, we kind of went back and forth on this for a couple of days about, are we really going to do this, and is it going to come out? I got to say, I think we had a really good show, and I think it was really awesome. So let me get some closing thoughts. Don, I'll start with you. If you're going to leave us with a closing thought, what do you give us?
I think the best thing I can tell you is, Rob kind of hinted at it, the emergency management, or the Emergency Training Institute up by the National Fire Academy, has an exquisite PIO course, level one and level two. It's a week long. I know when I say you're going to be gone a week, people say, oh, I just can't do that. Well, then be ready for 60 minutes to be on your front lawn. This will be the best investment that you never had to pay for. The classes are already paid for by our taxes. I appreciate you paying when I went, and I'll be glad to pay when you go. They are tremendous courses. They put you in front of a camera that's not a real camera. Patrick is right. Practicing that is the only way to be good at it. Even if you're lousy in front of a camera, these are times that you don't want to laugh. You don't want to make light of it. It's critical to everybody that you have this tool as a manager, and I would recommend that PIO course among any of the ones that I've seen around the country.
Let me pick up from Don, because last summer, the city of Richmond sent its entire 80-man EOC to Emmitsburg, and they have an EOC training section up there. And with that, and you go through every disaster, active shooter, hurricane, et cetera, et cetera. But the media section they have that's part of that EOC sort of testing cell is absolutely outstanding, and it really puts you through the ringer. But again, if you can do it under test conditions, that's the best place to do it. A quick anecdote, if I may. I got into writing, actually, because as the director of operations of an ambulance service back in the UK, we were getting dogged by a regional newspaper that had what they called the ambulance watch column. And every week they'd pick on something and really drill at it. And it was all, you know, just, again, impactful headlines. I went to see the editor and I said, you know, what's going on here? He said, well, you know, we have impactful headlines. I said, well, why don't we just spin this ambulance watch column round to the ambulance service watching the people? And he went, okay, well, you write it. And I went, okay, I will do. And before you knew it, and then I got a guy, one of my paramedics, who was quite handy with the quill as well, and we carried it on, and it kind of changed the perceptions around. So we took an opportunity, and opportunities don't come along too often with the media, but we took an opportunity to shape the perception of the people reading the paper, and it worked a treat. So if you get a chance like that, absolutely take it, and it really improved my writing skill. And the rest, as they say, is history. But, you know, look for those opportunities.
You have to prepare for the inevitability of this to happen. And I'll fall back with what I said very early on. The number one way to prevent this is to have an engaged, satisfied workforce. And that is a whole nother show. But if you are, you have to be a present leader in order to stymie dangerous behaviors or risky behaviors before they get out of hand. Second of all, if you're listening to this and you're a rural system or you're a third party that's a small company, you have to be prepared for this just as much as the guys who are running New York City, the NYFD, EMS, all of this stuff. It doesn't matter. If you're big or small, you have to prepare for the eventuality that this may occur to you. And then have a pre-plan. Have these basically template press releases that you can, like Rob was saying, cut and paste what happened, what's going on, what your organization's response is going to be, and reach out to your community media people and build those relationships and build the relationships with your hospitals, because they have people that do nothing but marketing communications too. Build a relationship with them, have them send you to their training, and build it's about building those community relationships, because ultimately when it happens, you're all going to be called out into the carpet, and it's good to have people standing behind you rather than helping the media throw stones.
You know, one of the things that I like to do, and you know, I kind of have some really interesting rituals as a type A personality leader. And that is, anytime something happens in the United States of an organization that happens in EMS, whether it's you know, a horrible story that hits the news, whether it's a catastrophe, a couple of days after that, I sit in my office during my work time and I play that scenario as if it happened in my service area. So how would I handle the media with this event? How would I handle the workforce with this event? How would I handle this natural disaster if this was me? How would I handle this, you know, this shooting or whatever it was that happened in our service area? Because we don't know when this is going to occur. And if we have the opportunity to use what happens in our career field as teaching moments for us, you know, a lot of things that we learn it after the fact and we don't live it in the moment. But we can still play that chess game in our head to say, if this happened here, how would this system address it? And, you know, kind of use that as a little bit of practice for you as well. So, guys, I think we had a really great show. You know, it was one of those topics that we had to talk about. But, you know, I hope we never have to use this stuff. But, you know, I think we said the inevitable is going to happen, whether it's a bad call, whether it's a natural disaster. But hopefully we're going to be ready for it. So for Don Lundy, Patrick Pianezza, Rob Lawrence, I'm Chris Sabalero. Until next time, everybody have a great week, and we'll chat with you again real soon.